it's innately a measure designed to protect fundamental rights, but it's fundamental rights as conceptualized within the EU, or at least by EU institutions.
With its size and heavy penalties on non-compliance, the European Union has an oversized influence on international tech companies well beyond its borders. In this episode, we chat about, firstly, just how the EU is trying to regulate AI, but also a lot of the political questions that come with the EU's oversized clout. The UK, for example, spent 5 years trying to leave the bloc, but for reasons we discuss in this podcast, its sovereignty to actually make regulatory decisions on AI separate to the EU is pretty limited. China, too, is developing its own detailed approach to regulating AI, a very different one which is influential in different ways and raising its own set of political and geopolitical questions. I'm joined by the brilliant Hugh Roberts, a researcher at the Said Business School. I'll let him introduce himself to start us off.
Thanks for having me on and inviting me. I'm Hugh. I'm a research fellow in AI and sustainable development at the Said Business School at the University of Oxford. So for my role here, I've despite the title, mainly been spending my time thinking about comparative AI policy. So really what's going on in different jurisdictions across the world, who's doing it well, who's doing it badly, and why. Before that, I worked in the UK government, so getting a bit of hands-on experience in AI policy making. So working on things like the UK's national AI strategy, but also advising on things like biometrics policy. And I guess the final hat that's probably worth mentioning is I'm currently doing a PhD at the University of Oxford's Internet Institute, where I'm trying to understand the global dynamics in AI governance, and particularly the role that China is playing in this space. So, big questions that I'm trying to address.
And you've studied in China, haven't you? You did a master's there.
Yeah, so I've previously spent time studying Chinese philosophy, of all things, focusing on early Chinese metaphysics, which I can't say is too helpful when it comes to policy making, but interesting nonetheless.
Fantastic. So we're going to be talking about AI, obviously, and kind of regulation. And this first question is a little bit controversial because we could talk about this for hours, but I think it would be useful to have like a working definition of AI to keep in mind. So could you attempt to give us one?
Yeah, so as you've alluded to, it's a somewhat controversial question, I think, particularly in the policy world, with the EU's definition, for instance, a lot broader than some others, such as the UK's. And I unhelpfully tend to follow a kind of I know it when I see it sort of understanding, because what concerns me about these technologies isn't really kind of particular definitions of how we understand it, or setting kind of broad kind of barriers for where we should stop understanding it, but rather the impacts that these technologies have. But I know that's unhelpful, so I'll try and give a kind of broad brush definition of the sorts of things that I'll be talking about when I'm thinking about AI. So I think the UK policy is actually quite helpful in this respect. So they focus on two aspects or features of technologies that would sort of indicate that they should fall into the kind of broad bucket of AI. And that is that they have the capacity to autonomously or semi-autonomously process data, and that this will provide the systems with a degree of adaptiveness over time. So i.e. that what they do might be more unpredictable than you just writing a line of code saying, I want X or Y. So from these features, the type of stuff an AI system could do is make predictions about, you know, what might happen, make classifications. So for instance, a facial recognition system, or finally generate content. So here I'm thinking of things such as deepfakes. So I hope that can provide a sort of working understanding that's not as tight as perhaps other people would go for.
That sounds really useful to me because it kind of captures just how widely applicable this technology, even though it's kind of more of a set of technologies, is. And just one final kind of motivating question here. Why is the regulation specifically of AI important?
Yeah, so I guess there's a few angles to take here. And I think the first is just emphasizing how much of a kind of transformative and ubiquitous set of technologies AI is. So, well, AI are. Not sure where to grammatically put that. In that these systems are being applied everywhere, they're developing quite quickly. And because of that, we need something to address the sorts of changes that these systems are bringing about. And here, more specifically, what I'm thinking about is the new challenges these technologies could raise, or the exacerbation of existing challenges that the integration of these systems could lead to. So first, regarding new challenges, just two examples of the types of issues that could be caused is, first, the black box, inverted commas, nature of these systems, i.e., we don't really, at times with a really complicated system, understand how it's working or why it's making the decisions that it is making. And this is, quite troubling at times when, well, two things, I guess. First, if we're unable to uncover why a decision is problematic. And secondly, yeah, if we do discover it's problematic, understanding why it's problematic is tricky. And the second kind of new challenge that AI systems raise is really this one of accountability. So AI systems, as mentioned in my kind of initial definition, have this ability to autonomously or semi-autonomously process data and adapt. So because of this, they are sort of doing their own thing. But then it's a definite kind of philosophical question of whether a system should be held accountable or whether it's someone who's fed into that system in some way. I.e., is it the programmer who should be responsible? Is it the person who's deploying the system? Is it, the underlying data sets that have been used, and so on and so on? And there aren't necessarily clear-cut answers to this. It will be very context dependent. And then, in terms of exacerbating existing challenges, one of the most obvious that comes to mind is bias. So obviously, we're a horribly biased society. That's kind of an underlying fact, unfortunately. But what these systems do is they can really exacerbate and standardize the types of biases we see in society. So here, just to give you an example, one of the most hard-hitting for me is always Amazon trying to develop a recruitment algorithm that sifted through CVs. And based on the data it was given, it started systematically discriminating against women based on anyone who had been to a kind of a traditionally women's college. So because of this, it's not just kind of one manager who is sexist, rather it is this standardized problem of everyone who had that college was sifted out. So what this means for regulation is we need to really ensure that the legal instruments that we have are suitably robust for addressing these challenges, and really providing clear guidance to people who are using these systems. Because whilst in my kind of academic bubble, it's quite easy to point these out and discuss them. If you're kind of on the ground developing these systems quickly and integrating them, you don't have the luxury of taking the time to think about it. So hopefully regulation can help address some of these challenges.
Thank you. That was a really clear explanation. So we're going to compare a couple of different approaches to how different jurisdictions have tried to deal with some of these challenges. Let's start with the EU, because in many ways it's perhaps the most influential. We might get to that in a minute. But how does the EU, just broadly speaking, kind of approach these questions of regulating AI, and what's its priority, if anything?
Yeah, so I would definitely agree with your assertion that the EU is kind of the reference point when it comes to kind of AI governance and regulation. And one of the reasons is it was quite an early mover in this space. So it's been around 5 years since it started seriously considering AI governance. And early initiatives really focused on things like guidance and principles. But more recently, this has turned into kind of hard regulatory measures that I'll talk about in a second. But I guess, like many EU regulations, what's really at the heart of this effort is to ensure that the fundamental rights of citizens are protected without unnecessarily constraining kind of innovation and industry within the EU. But I would say, compared to some other approaches of countries, as we'll talk about later on in this chat, the EU is very focused on individual rights. So, in terms of how it's actually thinking about regulating these technologies, the most kind of, I guess, centralized measure or the most evident measure is the Draft AI Act. So this was initially published by the European Commission last year, and it's a risk-based framework that seeks to kind of categorize different types of AI system and based on that give them different kind of regulatory requirements. So there are four tiers of risk within this framework. So the highest level of risk is unacceptable. So these are things that are seen as completely against EU values and a threat to fundamental rights. So here's social credit scoring is one of the kind of things flagged. Then we move down a level, and these are kind of high risk systems. And these are things like AI systems used for kind of safety purposes, in AI systems and products used for safety purposes. And these systems are really subject to a variety of regulatory restrictions, with things like kind of conformity assessments, which are basically documents that companies have to complete to make sure that their systems are doing what this regulation wants them to do. Down a level, you've got systems with transparency risks. So here it's things like chatbots, and what this level of the regulation hopes to do is really make sure that people aren't being misled by the systems, for instance. And finally, there's minimal or no risk, and there are no specific regulatory requirements for these types of systems, but they're still encouraged to kind of follow best practice. So what's important to flag about this EU regulation is that it was initially published by the EU Commission last year, but it's still a draft. And this draft is being debated and discussed within the other kind of two key regulatory bodies within the EU, so the Parliament and the Council. And once these bodies all come to an agreement on the final text, then it will go into law. And this isn't likely to happen really until late 2023 or perhaps even 2024. So there's still some time before this materializes, but we have quite a good idea of the types of things the EU is thinking about.
It's funny how the EU is such a huge machine and in many ways very slow, but was also one of the quickest on this. I just wonder, you said that the priority is in terms of individual rights. Could you maybe give us an example of where these AI technologies might conflict with that?
Sure. So I guess one of the big debates has been kind of remote biometric identification. So this is kind of long jargon, I guess, for things like facial recognition systems used in public spaces. And this is obviously a controversial topic because, on the one hand, using these systems can improve CCTV and, in some ways, improve the safety of society. But on the other hand, pose a real threat to the kind of privacy that the citizens in the EU have come to expect and are protected through things like the GDPR. So without kind of clear guidance on how these systems should be used, they could end up posing a threat, such as in that case.
And you mentioned how the EU is very influential kind of globally. Could you talk a little bit about the effect that EU policy has outside its borders? People talk a lot about this Brussels effect.
Yeah, of course. So I guess first, before jumping in, it's probably important to talk about what the Brussels effect is, at least at a high level, and then discuss how this might kind of play out in the AI Act down the line once it comes into force. So in essence, the Brussels effect is the idea that the market size and the regulatory capacity of the EU means that some of its legislative or kind of regulatory measures will be externalized outside of the country. The reason for this is companies don't want to follow different measures in every jurisdiction because that's costly, confusing, time-consuming, and risky, particularly given somewhere like the EU, where you can end up getting fined a quite significant amount of money if you don't abide by the regulatory measures that are in place. So because of this, the Brussels effect is the idea that the regulatory measures enacted in the EU will end up in some cases being followed by companies and perhaps even governments outside of the European Union. So to give probably the clearest example of this, the General Data Protection Regulation, something I mentioned earlier, was an EU initiative designed to protect the privacy of citizens within Europe. As an example, whenever you have to give your consent to have your data processed, this is on account of the GDPR, and it's a measure designed to ensure that you're empowered to make meaningful decisions about how your data is used. So obviously for kind of big platforms, websites, companies, et cetera, trying to localize this data protection just to Europe would be a complete pain. So if you look around the world at different companies, many of them have just started following the best practices laid out in the GDPR. Similarly, many governments have actually introduced legislative measures that are similar to the GDPR. So just one example is China's own privacy law, which came into force, I'm pretty sure, last year. And it has many of the same stipulations as the GDPR. So returning to kind of AI policy in particular, the degree to which the AI Act will lead to something like the GDPR's Brussels effect is a bit contested. But most people accept that the AI Act will have at least some international influence beyond the EU's borders. So it's just one really tangible example of this. The EU AI Act stipulates that outputs from AI systems that were outside of the EU, if applied in the EU, would still have to abide by the EU AI Act. So that was a complete mouthful, but I hope the kind of essence of it was clear. But basically, even if you're kind of developing a system outside of the EU and running the system out and deploying the system outside of the EU, if the output of that is used in the EU, then it still has to have followed the EU regulations. Similarly, if you're a kind of company outside of the EU exporting a system to the EU, you'll have to abide by the measures that are outlined in the AI Act. I guess one of the areas that hasn't really been talked about that much, but I find particularly interesting, probably on account of being British, if nothing else, is the potential impacts in Northern Ireland of the AI Act. So with all the mess going on with the kind of Northern Ireland protocol and trying to find an agreement of how to stop a hard border on the kind of Irish border, Northern Ireland has to abide by EU product regulations, in short. And the AI Act focuses on regulating AI as a product. So it's quite uncertain how this will play out in the next couple of years when this AI Act does come into practice, come into power and come into force. But we are in a theoretical situation where AI systems in England, Wales and Scotland may not be able to be exported to Northern Ireland on account of the AI Act, which in theory, you would hope that there are political dialogues which will prevent this, but certainly it's a risk, and it's something that was even flagged in one of the kind of House of Commons kind of committees.
Do you think this raises any kind of alarm bells for countries outside the EU in terms of like sovereignty, in terms of their ability to actually effectively regulate AI?
Yeah, so I think it's a really interesting question, right? And it's an extraterritorial influence that's quite different to those asserted elsewhere or from elsewhere, in that it's innately a measure designed to protect fundamental rights, but it's fundamental rights as conceptualized within the EU, or at least by EU institutions. So if fundamental rights aren't conceptualized in the same way, then this certainly poses kind of a big risk. And I suspect the UK in particular, with all its efforts and endeavors to break from EU regulation and law, would be particularly unhappy if in 2 or 3 years' time it found that all the companies based here are ignoring the regulatory initiatives going on domestically and are ultimately following EU best practice, which I don't think is out of the question to be a kind of future that will materialise.
So on that question of the UK, how does the UK differ in its approach to AI regulation?
Yeah, so I think the EU and UK in many ways represent different ends of the spectrum in terms of how AI can and should be regulated. So as I was mentioning a minute ago, the EU has taken this really horizontal regulatory approach. So it's introducing one kind of overarching legislative measure, and this will cover kind of all sectors and all uses of AI within the bloc and potentially outside of the bloc. In contrast, the UK has said that it wants more of a context-focused approach to AI regulation and governance. So what's meant by this is that the UK government thinks that a cross-cutting approach like the EU's isn't sufficient for understanding the sorts of contextual harms and impacts that an AI system might cause. So to give an example, the same image recognition system being used for a medical scan or for detecting a water bottle will come with very different levels of risk. So they hope that through introducing more of a context-focused approach, they'll be able to have a more nuanced and flexible approach to governance. So what this looks like in practice is, rather than having one overarching regulatory measure, relying on the UK's sectoral regulators and different ministries to deal with the specific harms within their sectors. So for instance, the Information Commissioner's Office or the Competition and Markets Authority or Ofcom, all looking at what their specific powers and remits are, and from that addressing what the harms of AI are. The UK has recognised to a degree that this could be slightly chaotic and are trying to deal with this through things like cross-cutting principles that will underlie how the sorts of guidance introduced by different regulators should be formulated, and also emphasising that the UK should follow more of a kind of pro-innovation approach, and that any measure by regulators should not focus on hypothetical risks, but only kind of inverted commas real risks. So I guess when it comes to comparing the UK's and the EU's approaches, we can see pros and cons to both, really. So certainly the contextual approach and the focus on flexibility within the EU's within the UK, initiatives are kind of noteworthy and beneficial, and they could lead to something that is far more flexible and robust to change over time. And depending on how the AI Act is kind of finalised, there could be seen as a kind of degree of rigidity there as to whether it is able to deal with the kind of fast-paced change that happens in the field of AI. But at the same time, the cross-cutting nature of the EU's measures and its kind of clear legislative stipulations means that it's black and white in a way. Obviously, exaggeration, but it's quite clear what's going on. Whilst having multiple different regulators try and deal with these technologies could really have two negative impacts. So the first is regulatory overlap or regulatory gaps. So two regulators saying different things or two regulators not seeing a specific area as their remit and thus ignoring it. And the second is resource constraints. So government salaries aren't the best. So to have the degree of expertise needed to regulate these technologies within each kind of UK regulator could be quite tricky in practice. So these are issues that the UK would have to address if it was to really enact a successful approach, I think, whilst the EU, I think, still needs to show that there is flexibility within its measures so that it can be robust to change over time.
That's really interesting how different they are. And just to come back to something you said earlier about the possibility that companies would follow EU regulation rather than UK regulation, does that depend kind of on, I guess companies follow the lowest common denominator, right? Or the most stringent regulation. So does that kind of assume that the UK would be less stringent in its regulation?
Yeah, exactly. Something that I should have mentioned is a lot of the UK's kind of post-Brexit narrative has been kind of making the most of this new regulatory freedom and offering more of a kind of permissible regulatory environment for companies to operate in. But the big risk here is, as you alluded to, that if the UK follows a kind of pro-innovation approach and comes with fewer specific restrictions, companies might just turn to the EU's measures because they want to export their tech into this larger market, which has, far more financial pull than the UK's.
Okay, so we're going to shift to something slightly different now. You mentioned earlier different conceptions of fundamental rights. Probably the best example of that is the way that AI is regulated in China, which is something you've researched. So what's the Chinese government's kind of approach to this, and what is their priority?
Yeah, so I guess there's kind of two questions there, the approach and the priority. And when it comes to the approach, earlier I laid out the UK and the EU on two ends of this kind of spectrum of how centralized versus decentralized the regulatory approach that was being taken was. And whilst in the UK it's sort of a free-for-all of every regulator to try and introduce measures. In China, there are a handful of regulators at the moment who are focusing on AI, and I think it will be this kind of select few who really do take the lead in regulating AI going forward. So I think the most notable here is the Cyberspace Administration of China, and this is the regulatory body that, in theory, deals with online uses of algorithms and AI and tech in general. And what they've been really active in doing is regulating specific types of AI rather than AI as a broad kind of technology more generally, as we've seen in the UK and the EU's approach. So for instance, one of the initiatives that they published last year, maybe even earlier this year, I'm losing track of the days. Is a regulatory measure focused on recommender systems. So a recommender system in general could be something like your TikTok algorithm of what video comes next. It could be which product you're being advertised on the web, et cetera, et cetera. And these were quite, I'd say, strict regulatory measures, and introduced a number of kind of features that are similar in some ways and distinct in others from the EU's measures, for instance. So one of the most notable is a kind of public database of recommender systems that will be regularly updated and which companies have to kind of send to the Chinese regulator to show transparently what their algorithms are doing. And whilst the publicly available data, perhaps unsurprisingly, is quite high level and doesn't really say much, a few researchers have pointed to the information that's actually sent to regulators being slightly more substantive. So there's quite a lot of efforts to check what's going on within these companies. Other quite interesting initiatives are, well, related to the recommender system example, is being able to opt out of recommendations. And in some cases, there is the proposal to be able to alter the parameters or reject specific parameters based on for the recommendation. So here, i.e., I'm a white man might be one of the kind of parameters that is being used within the system. Exactly whether that will materialize and how is an open question because it's a very difficult thing to do. But it's interesting seeing this sort of regulatory innovation coming out of China too. So moving to the kind of second point, which is really what characterizes the Chinese approach and how that relates to rights, for instance. So in the EU, what we've talked about quite a lot is this individual centric approach. So focusing on individual centric rights, for instance, privacy, Whilst in China, whilst fundamental rights of individuals are certainly foregrounded, we also see quite a heavy emphasis on the rights of people rather than persons. So focusing more on how society or groups of individuals may be impacted by these systems. When it comes to thinking about this in practice, I guess there's more leniency for kind of practices which are seen as being of societal benefit. So as one example, perhaps a controversial one, when it comes to the degree of kind of false positives, i.e. detecting someone as something when they're not, there's more permissibility of this. So for instance, in the example of using a facial recognition system, there's more a police or a local government would be happier to accept more false positives from the system than, for instance, in the EU model, where it's more individual centric. So there's less scope for that.
So they'd kind of rather arrest the wrong person than let them go on the assumption that their systems aren't that accurate.
Yeah, so it sort of seems like that, in that there's the more important thing is getting the maximum number of criminals or kind of the people that they want from the systems, rather than focusing on getting the kind of highest number of the highest percentage of right calls from the use of the systems, which certainly I think would be more heavily emphasized in the UK, for instance.
And how, just finally, how does that compare to the EU, both kind of regulatory, you've talked about this a little bit, but also like in terms of the like ethical principles kind of underpinning this?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting. I think we are still in the very early days of these regulatory kind of initiatives being introduced, so it's hard to come with anything too concrete at the moment. But I guess there's certain instances that we can see as distinguishing the two already. So one thing was this kind of individual versus societal focus. I guess another is kind of buyouts for government in a way, or kind of carve outs for government. In China, a lot of these regulations are kind of extremely harsh or extremely harsh towards companies, whilst less so towards kind of initiatives coming from central government. Yeah, and more generally, beyond this kind of distinguishing between the kind of singular regulatory mechanism versus multiple regulatory mechanisms, one of the, I guess, key things going forward is to just not see China as a kind of poor, weak regulatory environment that isn't kind of considering AI ethics at all, but rather to see China as a jurisdiction that's focusing on AI ethics in its own way, and the way it is regulating companies is based on the unique kind of political and legal structure within the country. So it's been harsher in many ways as a regulator than, well, certainly the UK and definitely the US as well. But the ways in which it does this are often quite different to the mechanisms available in other jurisdictions. So to make this tangible, and I guess my clearest example would be tech companies that have done wrong in the eyes of kind of regulators, publicly posting kind of admissions of wrongdoing and stating what they've done wrong and how they will reconcile this in their policy going forward. So the sorts of informal regulatory influence that shape, I guess, Chinese tech policy going forward is something else that's interesting and I think should be watched within this kind of comparative frame.
And sorry, I know I've already said finally, but China is in many ways kind of a sheltered market. You talked about tech companies and the big, especially social media companies, but tech companies in general have kind of succeeded because Beijing has wanted them to and has kept out foreign competition. But I just wonder if China is would like itself to have some kind of Brussels effect, whether it's kind of focused within its own borders or whether it would like to be the one defining the rules of the game here internationally as well.
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting question, and one that I hope my DFIL will answer one day. but I guess there's been some research on, on the one hand, you've got the Brussels effect, right? But some scholars have started to look at what is called the inverted commas Beijing effect. And this is different from the Brussels effect because it's not focused on regulation, because China in many ways doesn't have the kind of strongest regulatory system, and that often on paper what is regulated for might not come into fruition in practice, because there aren't sufficient formal mechanisms to kind of support that in practice. So what the Beijing effect refers to is the export of infrastructures, particularly along the Belt and Road Initiative, so into many kind of global South countries and parts of Europe as well. And how the design of the technologies that are exported will inherently or innately have kind of Chinese governance norms embedded within them. So again, to try and be slightly more tangible with this, if you look at the export of kind of communications infrastructure, surveillance infrastructure, et cetera, a lot of it focuses on providing countries in the global south with a greater degree of data sovereignty, so control over their domestic data through using these infrastructures. But what scholarship has kind of suggested is that this is only partially a real kind of data sovereignty, right? Because you're still working within the confines of the infrastructures that the Chinese government have exported. So certainly a conversation for a different day, but I think one of the really interesting dynamics going forward is looking at how, for instance, technical standards will play out into these kind of areas of international divergence or extraterritoriality. So the EU AI Act will largely be, the details of it will be made in technical standards. So on the one hand, you have these technical standards being exported from the EU for things like how a system is designed, what counts as bias, et cetera, whilst on the other, you have the actual infrastructures often being exported from China, which come with their own technical standards. So how these two trends will be reconciled in the future is a big open question, and one that I think that no one has particularly good answers for just yet.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for speaking to us today, Hugh.
Oh no, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, remember to subscribe so you stay up to date with all our new content. We've got some really exciting stuff coming out in the next couple of months. See you next time.